Loudly, brought to you by Barfoot & Thompson.
Kia ora, welcome to Property Matters. Our team are on a quick break this week, but don't panic. We've taken some of our best bits from some of our episodes this year for you to enjoy. Welcome to Property Matters. Kia ora and welcome to Property Matters. I'm Stephen Dello. Great to have you here on Planet FM 104.6. And of course, you can listen to any of our previous podcasts on Spotify, Apple, Samsung Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love to listen to them. I'm sure we're there. This week, our team are taking a well-earned break, and we thought we'd bring you some of our favourite interviews so far this year. And I'm really delighted to welcome into the studio today, Hai Ming Zhang, who's here to chat about ABCD coaching. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stephen.
It's great to have you here. And look, before we even sort of launch into the book, you are, in fact, New Zealand's first Chinese hypnotist.
Yes.
And that's how we first met, was promoting on a totally different show, your comedy art shows. And I guess before we sort of unpack coaching and leadership and all of that, just tell our listeners a little bit about you and your very interesting career journey.
Okay, when I came to New Zealand in 1996, I was my major is in electronic engineering.
Okay.
So I got the master's degree in electronic engineering. And then when I come to New Zealand, my English is not very good. So I go to get a degree, a postgraduate degree in information technology. And then I work in the information technology for about 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and then I'm interested in, I start my own business, like a computer supported business, then I'm interested in marketing. And when I do marketing, I start to interested about psychology. You
know?
Yeah. And then later on, I also have a marriage problem, and then I go to counseling, and I really get into the psychology. So that's how I get into psychology and hypnotherapy.
So when did the hypnotherapy bit come in? What made you suddenly go, oh, this is a path I want to go down?
Because when I'm learning about psychology or like a life coaching, I want to be more confident. Particularly, I want to be more confident on the social situation. I feel like I'm not very confident on social. So I understand there's one technique, it's called NLP. Yeah, have you heard of NLP?
Yeah, I think so.
So they said NLP, using NLP technique, you can make you feel more confident.
Right.
And then I study NLP. And then NLP is, a lot of NLP technique is from hypnotherapy.
Right.
And then I'm a very curious person. I always want to learn. And then I started to learn hypnosis. And then I have a better understanding about how our human mind works. And then a friend of mine, he is also a hypnotist. He said, hey, let's to learn how to do a hypnosis show. And then we start to learn a hypnosis show.
That's brilliant. I love it. And your hypnosis shows, I mean, obviously you promote that from a comedy point of view as well.
Yes.
It can be used for entertainment, but also it can be used for the health side and the well-being.
Yes.
When do you decide what to do?
Yeah. I'm still doing hypnotherapy or life coaching. Yeah. Because actually we have, normal people have a misunderstanding about hypnosis. Hypnosis is actually happen every day in our life. Yeah. So after I learned hypnosis for a few years, I have a much better understanding. So hypnosis is a technique to influence other people. And a parent want to influence their children. Actually, that is a hypnosis. But most people, they are using hypnosis unconsciously. Or more dangerously, a lot of people using hypnosis is in wrong way. And it's not...
What do you mean by that?
For example, the parent want to encourage the people, the children, be more confident, right? To be good at the study, right? But they hypnotize their student because unconsciously they don't know. They say, if you continue doing like this, what kind of bad things are going to happen? But that is a bad hypnosis. And that will for example, it's a parent criticize children not study hard. Actually, that will make the student to dislike the continued study, and then the result will be opposite of the parents. What do they want?
Okay.
So yeah. So.
So give me an example of when hypnosis is used in a good way.
Hypnosis. You mean the daily life? Or
yeah. Yeah.
Okay. In the daily life, basically, hypnosis is help the people to concentrate what they want. So hypnosis can only help people to achieve what they want. For example, the children, the parent want to children to have a good study in school, right? And then, but children want to enjoy their life. They want to enjoy their time. So the parent needed to make the children to study with happily. And if the children, when they are studying, they feel happy, they will continue to more study. They will
right.
They will more and more like the study. And when they get a good score, they get acknowledgement from the teacher, from the student, from the parent, and they were more likely to go to study. So then they get into the positive loop. So that is the right way to do hypnosis. But a parent, if the children don't learn piano or whatever, they don't study hard, and the parent criticize them, that is going to the wrong direction.
Okay, fair enough. So when did the coaching side come in for you?
So the coaching side is if the parent and the children situation, I coach the parent how to coach right. their children, okay? And so hypnosis is the help of people to achieve their result. So this is the key, okay? I'm a confidence coach and a life coach. So if somebody, they said, I want to get out of depression, for example. So I can coach them to get out of depression. So how to get out of depression? If you somebody want to get out of depression, that is the wrong way to think. Okay? So I don't coach them get out of depression. I coach them to be happier. And then I help them how can be more focused on happier. Because happy is very easy. If you think something positive, you are happy.
Mm.
If you imagine something good things are going to happen, you will be happy. This is so easy. And when you think in something, good things are going to happen, you will get out of depression very quick. So we need thinking. We need to change, train our mind to automatically thinking positive. That is how people, successful people, they do.
So how do we do that? I mean, it sounds easy, but, you know, if you're working with someone who is in a depressed state of mind, they can't see the happy.
Yeah, okay. So there's a few things to do. So the most important part is they need to create. If somebody in depression or anxiety, okay, anxious, because they believe something bad is going to happen. So this is the key. So hypnosis is the best way to change people's belief. Mm-hmm. And that's my coaching all about. I help people to change their belief. Okay, then most people think, like, how can I change your belief? And my discovery is belief don't have to be true. And we believe a lot of things which they are not true. But the funny thing is, when you believe something, if you really believe something, this result will come automatically. So if you believe bad things are going to happen, the bad things can happen. So this is so interesting. For example, when I hypnotize some people, okay? When I hypnotize some people, I say, in the moment when you open your eyes, you will see there's an iPhone on the table. And this iPhone is 10,000 kilograms. You cannot lift it. I want you to try to lift it up. But the more you try, the more heavier you will feel. Because they believe what I say, they hypnotize. And when they believe what I say, and when they try to lift it up, they are going to like this. They are going to push. Mm. They are going to push to prove their belief is right.
Mm.
So we are proving our belief. So we are making our belief right, real. Okay? This is not a reality. Okay. So now when you believe your life is going to be no hope, and you will take action to prove your life have no hope. This is the key. Seriously, this is so important information. Mm. And what I do is I talk to my client. I say, well, if they read this book, that is how I explain. So you need to choose a good belief. Belief is don't have to be true. Mm. You need to choose a good belief and then take action to prove your belief is right. And then slowly accumulate a positive result to reinforce your belief.
Right.
And then you have more and more strong belief to be confident, to be positive, to be happy about yourself. Mm. So that is how it works.
Brilliant. So what does the ABCD stand for when you're talking about ABCD self-confidence coaching method?
Okay. ABCD, A means accept. Okay. So basically, ABCD coaching method is a help our client to create a positive loop. And then, so because the loop means the thinking and the feeling. So we need to create a positive thinking and a feeling loop. Okay, and when you create this thinking feeling loop, you can achieve anything you want to achieve. Seriously, it is possible, 100%. Say, if you want to achieve, if you want to become a great singer, okay, if you can create this thinking positive loop, you are getting better and better, better and better. And if you want to be good at a study, create this positive loop. So how to thinking positively, and you take action, and you see the result is good, then you take more action. So you're thinking more positive. So that is a positive loop. So ABCD is help the reader to create this positive loop. So A is accept. Accept anything happening in your life. Accept the reality. So if somebody have anxiety, right? Accept anything happening in your life. This is so important. Because if you not accept the things is going to happen, and if you cannot change it, if you can change it, that's fine. Mm. If you cannot change it, and then you still cannot accept what happened into your life, you will feel powerless. You will be exhausted. You will feel your life is out of your control, and then it get into the negative loop. You are getting worse and worse. So accept is a stop going to the negative loop. Yeah, so it's the first step. No matter your marriage problem, you lose your job or whatever, you are bankrupt, accept that first, okay? Because if you not accept it, even, for example, if you have insomnia, you have to accept you have insomnia. If you don't accept insomnia, you worry about it, you cannot get your sleep, and you are getting worse and worse, okay? So accept anything happening in your life. B is believe. Believe in yourself. No matter what happened, I'm okay. Okay, no matter what happened. So if you have insomnia, even I have insomnia, my life will continue. It's okay because something happened making me feel anxious. But as the problem will gone, I will get into normal life again. So this is a belief. Believe in yourself. No matter, even your marriage is broken, you lose your job, even this kind of things happen, believe in yourself, something will change, you will be okay. Believe, okay. C is change. Change negative interpretation into positive. So what is negative interpretation? Like a relationship broken, right? So a lot of people, your girlfriend say goodbye to you. So we have default interpretation. Or they have a belief. They go, okay, so my girlfriend say goodbye to me is because I'm not good enough. Right? That is, I'm a bad person. I have no hope. I will never find a better girlfriend or something like this. So this is very bad interpretation. Yeah. So we need to change this meaning of bad interpretation into positive. So, for example, okay, so my girlfriend say goodbye to me. Which means, she said something, she said, my communication skills are not good, my emotion intelligence is not good. Okay, yeah, I accept that reality, okay? So my girlfriend said goodbye to me, which means I need to learn, need to improve, which means I have a bigger space to grow. My life can be better after I learn this new skill, train my skill. So that is a positive interpretation. Mm. So change negative into positive. And then anything can be like that. If you're bankrupt, you can change. Some people go bankrupt, they feel like they're depressed, right? You can change. Bankrupt means you made some mistake, but who don't make a mistake, right?
That's everybody a chance to start again, yeah.
And you learn you can learn so much, and then you can start again, right? So life is just a journey. Always, anyway, doesn't matter, right? It will enrich your life experience. So that's good. So always change to negative into positive. And then the most important part, D, do it. So after you have a positive interpretation, what happened, then you need to take action to do what you think, what you believe, positive belief, right? And then when you, for example, your boyfriend or girlfriend say goodbye to you, you say, okay, which means, yes, I accept my emotion intelligence is not that good. I need to learn. And then you can learn communication skill, right? You go to school, you go to learn from expert, maybe go to get some coaching. And then you do, somebody teach you how to do it, and then you practice. So take action, it's a practice. And then you're getting, okay, I'm getting better and better. Mm-hmm. And then the result will be changed, right? And then your belief will change. And you have a more positive in automatic interpretation about your life. And then this is how you get in the positive loop.
To support something really different, something wonderful. So we have Matt and Katie Rose in from the Neurodiversity in Education Coalition. That is a mouthful. Thanks for giving that to a radio host. Welcome back, mate, Matt, and welcome, Katie Rose.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Great to have you both here. So before we go sort of deep diving into this, tell us a little bit about who you are. So Katie Rose, who are you?
I'm part of the YNC, the Young Neurodiversity Champions. The group itself is a group of like neurodiverse learners from all over New Zealand who are neurodiverse themselves and have experienced the struggles of being in an education system that doesn't support us. So we're all banding together to help change that for future generations.
Okay, and can I be cheeky and ask how old you are, and are you at school or uni, or what are you doing?
I'm 18 years old now. I'm going to Auckland University of Auckland, studying psychology, which I'm really interested in. It ties into neurodiversity pretty well, and I'm really enjoying it so far.
Brilliant. Now, Matt, you're no stranger to the show. We've had you on before, and you work a lot behind the scenes for us. So tell us a little bit about you and what's your link in here.
Yeah. Well, firstly, thank you for having us today. It's great to come here and talk a little bit about the work we're doing. Yeah, so I've been here before. So I day-to-day run my own digital growth agency. So working predominantly with impact-focused brands across the world that are really trying to make a change in the world and make a tangible difference that we can touch, smell, see, feel, that sort of thing. And my link in here is I've been working with the New Zealand Centre for Gifted Education for the last 2.5 years or so, predominantly working around the social digital sort of space, helping them with a number of different things around comms and all that sort of thing. And it was probably about a year and a half ago that Justine and myself, the CEO of NZCGE, we sat down and said, it's becoming a bit tiresome having us older generation, and I'm going to say that very broadly as older generation because I don't fit into either side. I'm somewhere in the middle at 24.
Oh, so old.
But it's time for us to stop being the voice and the face of these sorts of things. This is a youth organisation. We're there to support young people. We need young people really at the forefront of that. So we looked to set up a group called the Young Neurodiversity Champions, which Katie just mentioned, and it started off as an idea to have them basically create a bit of a focus group of young people telling us, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? Where are the gaps? What really matters to you as a young person? And very quickly, as we started that process, we reached out to all of the other neurodiverse organisations in New Zealand, so ADHD New Zealand, Dyslexia Foundation, Autism New Zealand, and the countless hundreds of other organisations that are out there doing great work, asking them to share, being very cheeky and saying, can you share this with your community and help us? And then very quickly that formed into the four kind of main neurodiverse organisations in New Zealand, the peak bodies being New Zealand Centre for Gifted Education, supporting gifted learners, ADHD New Zealand, Dyslexia Foundation and Autism New Zealand. And we jumped on a Zoom call. At the time, it was still just post-COVID. Everyone was doing Zoom. And sort of said, look, we're all fighting for the same change. We all want the same difference in New Zealand. We know where the gaps are. We know what works. But when we're advocating and when we're out there doing the work, we often look like we're competing against each other. But fundamentally, we're singing the same song sheet. So we said, what would it look like if the four organisations came together and formed a coalition and said, don't stop the work you're doing individually. That's very important for your communities. But when it comes to an education lens, why don't we come together and advocate collectively to government, corporate partners, schools and the like, and come in together. There's more power as a collective. So very quickly, we formed the Neurodiversity and Education Coalition. And my role within that is sort of a, I guess the word is project lead, conveyor. I sort of act as a third-party voice who's not one of the CEOs of the organisations, who can kind of look a little bit more, I guess, from a bird's-eye view rather than coming in with any kind of agenda or anything like that, and work very closely with all the organisations on delivery and everything involved in this organisation, which is very quickly becoming a behemoth. Is shifting, I think. So over the last 18 months, since I've been really headfirst in this space, the narrative is definitely shifting. Is it shifting fast enough? I'd say the answer is no. There's some very clear correlations that we can be making towards young neurodiverse individuals and the outcomes that they are expected to see, given the level of support that we have in the system. Now, as Katie Rose said, and I want to make this very clear, this is no fault of any one individual. Any parent listening with neurodiverse kids, it's not your fault. Any educators, it's not your fault. Medical professionals, the justice system, it's a collective failure of a system. And I think, you know, one of the big pieces of work that we're doing, and one of our core focuses actually, is the problem of the failure of the system is the awareness of the problem.
Right.
Most people we talk to on the street, most people that we engage and communicate with, don't know what neurodiversity is. When you hear the term neurodiverse, you think, oh, you're that weird kid who sits in the corner and fiddles with his thumbs and struggles to speak, or, you know, or you're the young woman who has way too much energy and you run around the room and you never do any work. Or we think of the very extremities, right? As we do with most things when you don't understand. We think of the far weight extremities of that one case, of that one weird, and I say that with my fingers moving, that one weird kid in the corner at school, right? That's just not what neurodiversity is. So without bombarding you with stats, a couple of kind of high-level ones to showcase the depth of this, we estimate, and I use the word estimate quite lightly because there has been no studies done in New Zealand that we're aware of that really quantify this problem. The data we take is a congregation from global data run through mathematical algorithms to quantify back to New Zealand. So we estimate that one in five or 320,000 young people in New Zealand are neurodiverse. Of that, you would be lucky if 30 to 40% of them are diagnosed. The rest remain undiagnosed. You can imagine what that does, as Katie Rose mentioned, to the psyche of a young person who's labelled weird, odd, troublesome, annoying.
So why are they not diagnosed? Where is the gap? Is that we as parents are not as the first step in this, recognising this? Because, you know, surely we're raising children before they get to an education system or a health system.
Yes, to an extent. But the reason I don't put blame on parents is you weren't taught what neurodiversity was. And even if you were, you weren't taught coping mechanisms or strategies to deal with it, or nobody is taught for these sorts of things, right? And we've seen it over, excuse to take it this angle, but we've seen it over the last sort of 5-6 years with the gender discussion, right? And we see a lot of all the sexuality discussions or anything like this. We often see the older generations who have gone through a large period of their life not understanding, not knowing. It wasn't a thing. We didn't talk about it back then. And then overnight, we just expect them to completely understand what this is and fully adapt to it. There's no fault to anybody in here. It is purely a systematic problem that, like I've mentioned, the awareness is just not there. We aren't running quality educational discussion explaining what neurodiversity really is.
So this is where the Coalition and Champions come in?
Correct.
Yeah, so, Katie Rose, tell me a little bit, what is some of the work that you and your team and Matt's team is doing when it comes to the both the Champions and the Coalition?
So I think last year what we did was, well, we had created a white paper that was Justine and Matt's doing, and we got to present that at Parliament to multiple parties and say, hey, we're here, this is kind of who we are, this is our story, and this is like we're... This is the things that we would like changed in our education system. So in our law, so we're not leaving anyone out and schools have to listen.
How did that go, presenting that?
Honestly, it was nerve-wracking, but I think it went really well. We met so many people, we made some connections, and we got a really good response. But I think we're making a new white paper this year, which Matt might speak upon later. And another thing we did was in Wellington, Festival of the Future, where we held a stall, and we were just educating everyone who went to this like leadership event, this is who we are, this is how to support us, and this is what neurodiversity is. But yeah.
Very, very humble.
Reaching, These
young champions have done a lot more than just that. You know, from a digital space, which is what I'm native with, these guys have reached well over 1 million people in their first year of work, which is absurd. That's a large number of people. More media than I've ever seen a new, what I'd call a new startup, get off the ground. We're in every major publication you can imagine, TV, radio, newspapers.
Education Gazette.
Yeah. They're very humble, Katie Rose.
So you're getting out there and you're getting the message out there. What change are you noticing, or, and I guess, how are you measuring that?
I think it's, I think we're in a really interesting time in general at the moment, in the sense that young people's voice is becoming stronger and it's becoming more listened to. What I mean by that is, I think back to when I was in high school, which was many moons ago now, 6-7 years ago. Very different space now, in the sense that I feel young people have a lot more weight in conversation when they're at the table. The problem is getting them to the table,
yeah.
Right? So our priority, and when I say our, I'm meaning the coalition side, our priority and most importance is placed on having our champions at the table in the discussion, because we know when these guys tell their stories, rooms change. And we've seen it. I had a discussion with somebody the other day who, prior to the work we did, had no idea what neurodiversity was and refused to believe that things like ADHD were even a thing, right? Oh, it's just another label you've given your kid. There's nothing wrong with them. Grow up, right? Now, after a year of seeing all the work they've done, messaged me the other day and said, hey, I just want to apologise. I had no idea this was actually even
brilliant.
Real.
Love it.
So it's shifting. Shifting. Slowly.
Where would you like to see it go this year?
Yeah, we've got a big roadmap this year. So a few kind of key areas, and I'll raffle them off nice and quickly. One is we are releasing a new white paper this year. We'll be working on a new white paper around the state of the nation. So collaborating with a number of organisations around understanding where the nation currently sits. Funding in this space is incredibly poor. You know, we've got some organisations that are literally running off the love of the people that run it. And I'm talking peak bodies of organisations in this country that receive $0.
What are your thoughts on the current state of the market as of today? What are you seeing out there?
So we're seeing just lots of listings. And, you know, in 2008, you know, we had, it's probably the closest when we go back in terms of number of listings.
Oh, really?
So at the moment we've got...
That far back?
Yeah, we've got 41,000 homes for sale. And just to put this in context, in August 2021 as a data point, you know, we had just over 12,000 homes for sale. So we're seeing this massive uplift. And you look at February and there was, the numbers were, you know, over 40%. Admittedly, you're comparing that to the prior year where there were floods, et cetera, but even still, it's just a massive availability of stock, which gives buyers lots of options and certainly keeps their agents very busy.
Do you have sort of data around how fast that stock turns?
Yeah, we do track it, and you know, it's an interesting one. The market does change on a dime sometimes as well, so there is a lot of stock. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that sells through over the next sort of three to 6 months, and also there's a lot of legislation change as well that's happening. So it's very, very hard to predict, but it will be interesting to watch it.
How much do the seasons play a part too?
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, huge.
So we're heading into a quieter little patch?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you do get people that go for spring and for summer, and then there is a steady tick over during those, you know, across through the sort of winter season as well. But yeah, it, you know, certainly the summer gets people out and about.
Okay. So what trends are emerging?
So we're seeing certainly a lot of, there's still a lot of activity. So we were looking this morning actually, and we've got, you know, our traffic's up 11% year on year. We've got inquiries, people inquiring. So there is activity happening in the market. And it's just, it's buyers and consumers starting to look at what their options are. So a lot of interest in, you know, data points around what's happening in that suburb, what's happening, you know, what's been selling recently, so that we're seeing a lot of interest in the data side of it, but also that activity of people going through open homes and starting to look at, you know, look at what their options are. But again, it can be it can depend on what part of the country you're in as well, in terms of what that activity looks like.
Before we went on air, we were talking about your data, sort of looking back over the last decade.
Yes.
What trends did we see there, or what, I guess, are the surprise points for today?
So, you know, this was a fascinating one. So we looked at data from 2014 to 2023. So it gives us a full 10 years. And, you know, when we looked at the data, it was more of a regional story than it was a metro story.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the shift in what's happened across our country in the last, you know, 5 years, I suppose, you can see that move, that increase in flexibility, people looking to move to outside of the metros, so out of Auckland, Wellington and Christchurch, and starting to move into those regional markets. And that's really interesting. I can just talk from our business alone. You know, 3 years ago, all our developers were based in Auckland, in our head office. Now, that is not the case now. They are in, we've got some in Whanganui, we've got some in Christchurch, we've got some in the Bay of Plenty. They're all over the place. So you can see that shift. And some of those people were in Auckland, even just in our company, and they've moved to those regional places.
Did COVID play a little hand in that, though? Yes. And there's sort of that trust that we now realise that people can work from home, so therefore you may choose that your home isn't where the work was in Auckland.
Correct, yeah. And I think that has definitely, that has been a shift. We had our team actually working remote, our development team remote first, just before COVID hit, but we've certainly seen that trend, and now it's part of the way that we work. So when you look at, you know, those sort of average asking price shifts, you know, Auckland went up 51%, but just to put that in context, Bay of Plenty went up 110%.
Wow.
So average asking price was up 110% in that area. You know, Canterbury was 57, so again, going back to that metro story, the most positive market was actually Wellington, that was up 80%, just over 80%. But there are some big shifts, you know, Hawke's Bay up 121%. The standout region was actually, was Kawerau in Bay of Plenty, and that was up 260%.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
You wonder what triggered that.
Well, a small base.
Yeah.
So very affordable.
Yeah.
Moving from 120,000 average asking price to 443. So I'd say Kawerau is still actually a really affordable place to live. But massive increases. And the other one that, you know, gets talked about a lot is obviously Central Otago Lake. So that's up 106% on the 10-year data story. But most interestingly is Wanaka, you know, up 135%.
Mm.
So, I mean, you just go down and spend time in any of those areas. I mean, New Zealand's a beautiful country on a good day.
Yeah.
But there are some exceptional pockets, Hawke's Bay, Bay of Plenty, and you see that in the numbers.
Look, realestate.co.nz, they've been helping Kiwis searching for property for so long now. How has the way we look for a property changed since the platform was established?
Oh, I think the big thing would be actually about mobile. And, you know, because it started as a website, and mobile is just another form of that. But it is about, you know, having a mobile app that you can access and it's in your pocket. And, you know, we are able to do so much more in terms of communicating, helping people, helping buyers on their journey by having that in their in their pocket. And actually it's really helpful for agents too. So by having the mobile app, you can you can take notes on a property in the mobile app. You can do, you know, the hearts. You can schedule your open homes. You can set it up to send you notifications in-app. So, you know, the moment a property matches your search criteria that you've saved, you know, it can come through to you as a push notification. So, you know, you're looking in Cambridge and it will pop up and match that property. You know, that is an advantage for someone that wants to be on top of the property market. And, you know, the idea that you're getting that the moment it comes to market, I think makes a big difference.
And not another email in your inbox. Is that for rentals as well as sales?
It is for the rentals as well as sales. And the other thing on the sales space is when you're tracking a property and it changes, so maybe it went to auction but it got passed in and then it has a fixed price of $700,000, you can actually get those updates as well. So, you know, there's a lot of information that you can actually get in your fingertips that comes through that mobile app, whether you're trying to, you sort of starting that research phase, whether you're really in the sort of that 6 week to 8 week hunting phase, but it certainly allows you to be on top of your market in a really immediate way, and I think that's a big shift. We're seeing our mobile app is just, you know, the uptake it's just growing all the time.
So with all of that in mind around how we're looking, how have you as a company had to change or keep up with it? I guess, how do you keep up with it all?
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually get a lot of inspiration from other industries. So I love looking at what other countries do or how things operate. And I remember years ago when I lived in the US, you know, you would be in Target and you would get an offer the moment you were in the aisle in front of the item.
Oh, wow.
You know, they were so, this is a while ago now, this is sort of 10 years ago, they were so close to that, to the consumer in that transaction. So I'm always looking at, you know, what are the tools, what's happening globally in property portals, but also I draw a lot of inspiration around, you know, what is it that would be useful that's being used in another industry. And then the other part for us is we talk to our users of our site all the time. So, you know, that creates a way for us to generate ideas. And we've actually just got a new feature that's come out last week. You know, that was actually, we did a big innovation tournament across our whole company. So the whole company contributed to ideas. And this idea actually came up in different ways several times. And then we tested it with consumers and then we've launched it. So we try and use our own team as well as idea generators.
Can we find out what the idea was?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, I'll tell you what that idea is. So the idea is listing minimise. So when you conduct a search, let's just say Cambridge, and then it comes to the search results page and it's got all the properties in Cambridge and you've filtered it, as you're going through it, you can click on a listing and go and look into the listing, so what we call the listing detail page. If you decide this isn't going to match for you, doesn't have the right number of bedrooms, or maybe just the look or the layout of it doesn't work for you, it's not what you're after, you've actually got there's a thumbs down button, and then that will minimise it. And then when you go back to the search results page that shows you all the listings in Cambridge that you're looking at, that listing will still be there, but it'll be minimised, and it just helps you filter your search. And so the same happens in rentals, right? When you've got so many rentals, and rentals, I feel like as a sector, your search is probably broader than when you're buying potentially.
Right.
So you know, depending on age or stage, you know, you might have more flexibility. If you're a student, for example, you might go, I'm going to live in Epsom, Mount Eden, or Mount Albert.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're a buyer, you might be more tied to a school zone. So that's a really great feature. And the beauty of this feature as well is that when you minimise it, or when you do the thumbs down, it clicks up and actually asks you, you know, why are you minimising that? And that feedback actually goes back to the agents as well, so they can then work with the vendor to say, actually, it's price, or it is maybe we need to change the landing photo, or it gives more of a conversation. Because sometimes,
thanks for tuning in to our special episode, just looking back at some of our favourite interviews so far this year. We'll be back next week with our usual show. We will look forward to catching up with you then. Thanks, Adam, for editing this one together. Have a fabulous week, and remember, you can find all our previous episodes on Spotify or your favourite podcast site.